Now let's get back to the best moments of the year as provided by our panelists. We especially love it when our panelists work together as a team. Throughout our May 15th show this year, Roy Blunt Jr., Adam Felber, and Paula Poundstorm were like the tightest jazz trio you'd ever want to hear. We pick up the show with the top story of the week and a round of Who's Carl This Time.
Here is your first quote.
Can you hear me now? Good.
We were put in mind of that well-known line from the cell phone commercials when news broke this week of what heretofore secret government program?
Three telephone companies agreed to track Americans' internal calling.
You're exactly right. Very good. When it was revealed a few months ago that the National Security Agency was wiretapping phone calls without warrants, we were told, hey, it's just terrorists, don't worry about it. Then this week, USA Today revealed that the phone companies have been handing over, once again without warrants, huge databases of basically every phone call made by anyone in this country anywhere to anyone else. President Bush said, first, this program was completely legal, just like everything else he does.
The one company, Quest, didn't go along with it. So
yeah.
Quest apparently is pure Qaeda. I don't see any other reason why they wouldn't just go along with it.
Well, wasn't Quest being investigated at around that time anyway for financial malfeasance? Am I making that up?
I don't know.
Oh.
I know that what happened was is they went to the four major phone companies,
mm-hmm.
and they said, well, we need all of your phone records to track the terrorists who are trying to destroy our country. And Quest, the only one, said, well, okay, but, you know, we'll need a warrant. And they said, okay, well, then forget it.
they even offered a workaround for the warrant. They said, you know, just a letter from the Attorney General.
Yeah.
Then. Yeah.
And show us a badge or something.
Yeah, I mean. The NSA's like, sorry, we wrong number. Click.
This whole thing is so obviously a setup to see who switches over to Quest. They're just gonna have FBI at the new accounts office. Everybody who goes to Quest is automatically a terrorist. Don't you get it?
It's the most brilliant sting ever.
Okay, Judith, here's your next quote.
Dear infidel crusader, Zionist sock puppet, Saudi lackey, despoiler of Mesopotamia, woman-touching, fiendish, shah-licking, son-of-a-toad's offal, I trust this finds you well.
Okay. That was from an unauthorized translation by the columnist James Lilacs of a letter somebody sent this week to President Bush, who is President Bush's new pen pal.
Oh, it's the president of Iran, Ahmadinejad.
Close enough. It's the president of Iran.
If Judith had pronounced the name right, then I'm afraid we would have had to check her phone call.
Yeah.
Oh, we were checking anyway.
This Quest line sure is clear, isn't it? Didn't get this kind of service on the old line.
Except for the clicks.
And that constant shushing sound in the background.
Anyway, back to the letter.
You know what was really great about the old service, though? Sometimes I lose my place in conversation, and I could always go, where was I? And then a government voice came in.
And from there, we moved on to the first round of questions for our panel.
Adam, when asked to name the highlight of their presidencies, Jimmy Carter said it was the Camp David Peace Accords. Bill Clinton said it was ending the war in the Balkans. Well, in an interview just this week with a German magazine, President Bush was asked to name the highlight of his presidency. He thought about it and then answered, what?
I'm president? Wow, I should throw me a party or something. No. He said that it was catching a 7.5-pound perch in his own lake.
That's right. What it was.
Yeah.
And I'd like to defend the president on this. Okay. I think he was right.
He was asked about the best moment of his presidency, and he said, I quote, you know, I've experienced many great moments, And it's hard to name the best. I would say the best moment of all was when I caught a 7.5-pound perch in my lake, unquote.
Before he caught the perch, he tried diplomacy.
And he said,
he gave it a chance.
I know. He said, well, what was I supposed to do? Trust the word of a mad fish?
It's a big mission accomplished sign over the lake. Boy, that aircraft carrier barely fit in that lake, did it?
It's supposed to say fishing accomplished.
Yeah. Finally, let's listen as Roy, Paula, and Adam take on that week's Listener Limerick Challenge. Here is your next limerick.
Mixing a cocktail, we flunk, but we still hit the schlitz in a funk. When Tarzan's a dud, we say, break out the bud. Monkeys are just like people when...
drunk.
Right, yes. They get drunk, then they get into Jettas, and all hell breaks loose. No, a study from the National Institutes of Health finds that monkeys act much like humans when they hit the bottle. For example, lonely monkeys drink 2 to 3 times more than those that have companions. Oh. Also, just like
they're
people...
they're drinking for two.
Yeah. Just like people, some primates are predisposed to alcohol dependency, may drink more when stressed. Scott Chen, one of the study's authors, said, quote, it was not unusual to see some of the monkeys stumble and fall, sway and vomit. And a few of our heavy drinkers, they would drink until they fell asleep.
Mm. They don't call people up in the middle of the night, though.
No.
You just hear them bouncing and going...
I don't want to be seen as exploiting the problem, but if any of you have a monkey with a drinking problem, I'm opening a rehab.
Some of them... Some
that's
of them...
funny, because I'm marketing monkey brow. See, cross purposes there, Paula.
A lot of monkeys have said that it's helpful just to sit in a circle with other monkeys with the same problem.
Just talk about it.
And just, you know, be open.
Sometimes it's awful. Sometimes the monkeys get so drunk they start hitting on the macaques, and those are ugly creatures.
What are you looking at?
What's hitting bottom for a monkey?
Never seen a guy hit a banana before. Yeah, exactly. Right, when you're dealing with a species that's known to throw its own waste.
Yeah, already. Yeah, sober.
And they're healthy. That's, that's a well-adjusted monkey doing that. Yeah, so. Yeah.
From the handful of monkeys that I've reached out to. and we've all been there, but... a number of them have said to me that when they wake up in the morning with a monkey they don't know.
Yeah.
That's a particularly low point.
Yeah. I can handle it.
All right. That's enough of that. All right.
I don't think there will ever be enough of that, really.
No.
That's it for our All-Star Spectacular. I think you'll understand why, when it comes to our panelists, we keep them locked in a basement, letting them out only when it's time to do a show. With talent like that, you have to protect it, especially from other people who might be willing to pay them more. Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me is a production of NPR and Chicago Public Radio in association with Urgent Haircut Productions, Doug Berman, executive producer. All the excerpts from our program you heard this week were directed by Amanda Gibson and produced by Mike Danforth and Emily Ecton. Our limericist is Philip Gotica. Our web guru is Paul Heltzel. Our technical directors are Robert Newhouse and Lorna White. BJ Lederman composed our theme. The senior producer of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me is Rod Abee. Thanks this week to our panelists, the ones you heard on this show and the ones you'll hear on the next show. And thanks, of course, to you, our listeners. I'm Peter Sagal, and we'll be back next week. This is NPR, National Public Radio.